This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Rajiv Rishikaran is here. He is the Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman, and he's here to talk about the Petaling Jaya Local Master Plan. The city is founded in 1952 on rubber estates to support the booming population of KL. The first homes were built in what is known today as Old Town. BJA was awarded city status in 2006, and close to 700,000 people call the place home today, and it's more than the whole of Iceland. BJA has a local master plan like most cities in Malaysia, and it recently underwent a few amendments. Rajiv, welcome back.
Hi, it's good to be back.
What is the BJA master plan?
Well, the PJA local plan is essentially a document that maps out every square inch of land in PJA, and it tells all the landowners what they can and cannot do on their property. So basically, it's a document akin to a master plan that zones up the city accordingly, so you have no surprises. You know what you're getting yourself into when you buy a property. You know what your neighbors can and cannot do with their land. You know what's going to happen in the piece of land in front of your house, behind your house, next door to your office, and so on. So master plans are widespread around the world. It's not a new concept. It's not something unique to PJA. It's very necessary, in my opinion. It's very important, in my opinion, because it gives you a sense of knowing what's going to happen or what can happen in the land around you. So it should impact your decisions when you buy your house, when you decide to invest in a factory. You know what's going to happen around you. So it's not the common practice today for people to look into the local plans, whether it be in PJA, Subang Jaya, Klang, Kuantan, or Johor Bahru. It's certainly not the normal practice when you buy a house that you would open up this document and see, like, okay, what's zoned around my house? Is there playgrounds? Is that empty land zone to be a playground? Is that empty land zone to be a cemetery? Is that empty land zone to be a commercial building? So, and actually, we do have an answer to all these questions. It's the local plan. So you should have no surprises. You can know exactly what's coming up around you.
But we do that on a superficial level, right? We'll drive around and see where maybe there are
schools around. I think when we buy properties, by and large, we do that. We drive around and observe. It's good to do that, but it's even better if we just invest just a little bit of time to visit your respective local council and look at this map.
Is it accessible to the public? Because I think the last I read, it costs 150 ringgit to purchase a copy of the master plan?
That's quite right. So it's accessible in the way that anyone can purchase this document, or in fact, you can just go look at it for free at your respective local council, or you can buy it. So there is a small cost in purchasing this plan. It covers basically the cost of printing the document, because it's not just a map, it's more than that. It's there's a whole thick book of descriptions that come along with the map. So that descriptions describe the zonings in detail. So you see on the map blue color, which typically means commercial in Malaysia, but what does the commercial restrictions entail? And this is where the book that comes along with the map will then go into greater detail to say that in this particular location, the commercial buildings can only be 4 stories high. And in this particular location, the commercial buildings can go up to 50 stories high. So you might be interested to know that, and that's when you can look into the book. So you look at the map, you can see the zonings, what color is cemetery, what color is factories, what color is commercial, what color is green spaces, that's typically green color. So that's a very good overview, and then you can look into the book to get greater detailed information of the zones.
So if I go to a council office now to get a copy of the map, is this plan, is it what we've always have?
This plan evolves over time. So every municipal authority would amend the plan from time to time. Some of them amend it a bit more often than others, but a township should be dynamic. It should be alive. It should continue to evolve. It should not be static. So if a plan hasn't been updated in over 10 years, I would say it's time for the authorities in that city to relook and see what can they do to, you know, rejuvenate parts of the town, to further improve the city, because cities should always grow and improve. Not necessarily welcoming skyscrapers. It doesn't have to mean any move will result in more skyscrapers, but, you know, any improvement is good, and not having any improvement for many years is bad. So the plan should always evolve. So in PJ, it's going to go through another round of amendment this year, and we'll talk more about that today.
Our phone lines are open. You can call us at 7710 9000, WhatsApp us at 0162019000, or tweet us at BFM Radio. How would you like to see PJ better zone or plan? Right now, we are going through some amendments.
Yes, that's right. So we are going through some amendments, and that is to further improve the plan. So it last went through amendments in 2014. So that was 2.5-3 years ago. The public was invited to give a lot of feedback. That feedback was taken into account, and the final decisions were made. So there were some amendments back then, but this time it's undergoing through a new series of amendments. There have been quite a number of proposals from landowners, from the community, and as well as MPPJ themselves are bringing forward some proposals. And in fact, I myself have given some suggestions to MPPJ to put in this round of amendments. So that will be revealed to the public in the next couple of months.
That would be the second public...
In fact, this would be the third round. Because we went through the first round of amendments in 2007, then the second one in 2014, and so now we'll be going through the third one.
Would you like to briefly run through what are some of these updates to the existing master plan?
Well, in PJ, we have two kinds of situations. The first kind of situations is that existing land use is changing in terms of two areas especially. The first is industrial areas. We have got a lot of industries moving out. So if you drive through Section 13 PJ, if you drive through Section 51, where it used to be historically very active industrial areas, quite a number of factories have moved off to other parts of the Klang Valley or moved overseas or shut down. So a lot of the industries are leaving. And this brings into light a very important question for PJ. How do we handle this? Now, do we rezone these lands into other usage? If so, what usage? Or do we want to keep them as industrial zones where we then have to step up efforts to incentivize new industries to come in to replace the industries that have left? So that's one area in PJ that needs to be dealt with. So the second area is houses along busy roads. So in the first round of amendments in 2007, houses along certain busy roads like Jalan University, Jalan Gasing and so on were given a limited commercial status. That means they could run certain commercial activities, but not all commercial activities. So they can't do restaurants, they can't do mechanic shops, they can't do grocery shops, but they can do a furniture store, they can do art gallery, they can do a doctor's clinic, and they can do a lawyer's firm and a few other things. So in this limited commercialization, the justification for that is that these roads have gotten to be main roads, very busy roads, and were no longer conducive for residential use. And a limited commercial status were given, limited so that it does not adversely affect the houses behind them, which are still residential. At the same time, allows these houses to be used for purposes other than residential. So since then, we've got an influx of people who want to turn their house into limited commercial status as well. So there's been a flood of requests coming in from all over PJ saying, no, I also want limited commercial status for my house because my house is near a busy road. Now, we have to draw the line somewhere. Not every road is a busy road. And in fact, MBBJ has rejected a lot of this request in these coming amendments. That means a lot of the requests from residents to amend their zoning from residential to limited commercial has actually been turned down. So it will not go through the process at all because we can't let this just spread and spread and spread. So, but there is the push and pull factor. So sometimes the current use is no longer needed or no longer usable, and so that's why you want to change the zoning. And sometimes it's because you want to bring in a new kind of industry or a new kind of service to the area, so you need to create zones to achieve that. So that comes to the second category of things. So what do we need in PJ that we don't have enough of? So there's a few things that comes to mind, and I'd like to see the PGA local plan being amended to improve on these areas. So one of it is affordable housing. We don't have enough affordable housing. In fact, housing in PGA is ridiculously expensive. So maybe some of these industrial areas can be rezoned into affordable housing. So that's under consideration. Second is places of worship. Unfortunately, the people that planned PGA many, many decades ago did not allocate enough spaces for places of worship. And that's why you see churches in shop lots and industrial lots, and you see temples here and there and everywhere. And so this round of exercise will also create a few new zones for places of worship. A lot of these new zones for places of worship have gone through rounds of negotiations with the parties and the communities where they are located at. I would like to see an increase of green spaces. Now, this is going to be challenging, but I would like to see an increase of green space. And I'm very happy that in the last few years, we've managed to create one new park in PGA, the Railway Park. And that's realizing the change of use of excess KTM land, which was not being used by KTM and being turned into a public park. So down the road, we need to look for more opportunities where we can rezone underused land into public parks, green spaces. We also want to see transport hubs come into play, public amenities. So I'm working on turning two pieces of land that are not being used productively now into community halls, where it is a public amenity that serves the people. So these are the things that we want: new services, we want new facilities, and then we've got to find a way, a plan to get them in our city. And that's where the rezoning or the amendments to the plan come into question. So that's basically the motivation behind amending the local plan.
I'm speaking today to Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Wishakaran. We're talking about the Petaling Jaya Local Master Plan, basically what we can do to make the quality of life of people living in PJ better. And this is coincidentally very related to what Rajiv will be speaking at the BFM Health and Living Live event happening on April 8th, 10 a.m. at the Simon Darby Convention Centre. The theme for that event is creating urban happiness, discovering how your brain is affected by urban living. And Rajiv, the session that you'll be on is actually is the pursuit of happiness making us anxious. But we'll talk more about that. Our phone lines are open after this short break. Call us at 7710-9000, WhatsApp us at 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio with any suggestions or questions. Stay tuned. You're listening to BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. My name is Chua Antek. Speaking today to Rajiv Wishakaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman, about the PJ Local Master Plan. And I just wanted to pick up on what you'll be speaking at the BFM Health and Living Life event, the pursuit of happiness in a city. There is the happiness report or happiness index that was recently released. Norway was placed first. Malaysia was placed 42nd. It would be interesting to know how well PJ is placed.
It should be very different. I mean, you've got smaller towns like Taiping and Kluang, and I think that would be very different from PJ and KL.
Yeah. A lot of the anecdotal evidence or reports that we are seeing is that urban living is very stressful.
It is.
And does the local master plan address this?
In a way, it does. Now let's look at stress, but without giving away too much, because if not, people will not come and come on the 8th. So
11 a.m. is your session.
11 a.m. is my session. Good to know. Okay, so do come at 11 a.m. if you can't come for the whole day. Mm. Now, but back to your question. There's the creation of spaces that create enjoyment in our lives, and there's also removing stresses that are already there in our life. So when we talk about creating, say, more green spaces, I believe this would contribute towards better quality of life, reducing your stress with this place. Now, imagine if your option for a lunch break is not just going down to a restaurant in a shop near your office or the mall near your office. Maybe if you had a green space option to have your lunch, which was not too hot, very shaded, that could be in a way you reduce your stress. So if you've got that, and then we've got traffic. I think traffic is one of the big stress contributors in our life. And if we plan our city well, if we improve on the planning of our city, and we can reduce traffic congestion, or at least reduce time you spend in traffic jams, because now you can afford an apartment in PJ, then that might reduce your stress and give you better quality of life. So town planning does play a role. It is not everything, but it does play a role.
You mentioned earlier that the upcoming public consultation would be the third one when the plan is being released for public viewing. And absent of that stage, if we miss that process, would we be able to petition the government or our local council about changes we want to make? Would there be an avenue for the public to air their grievances if they see a development that's happening next to their home or their business that they deem undesirable?
All right, so just a slight correction. This is the third round of amendments that we're doing. But with every round of amendment, the law requires us to go through two rounds of public consultation. So the first round of public consultation would be held for at least 4 weeks. And in that process, you can see the concepts, the ideas of what's going to happen, and you can write in your feedback. So forms will be prepared for you to write in the feedback, and you can submit them electronically or by old-fashioned hard copy on paper. And all that feedback will be taken into consideration by MPPJ in the case of PJ. Now, this is the same process that will happen in any other city. So wherever you're listening, if your city has a local plan that is undergoing an amendment, the same thing would happen. So then the city will review the feedback and decide if it wants to make any changes in accordance to the feedback it has gotten. And then we'll put the plan through a second round of public display, and where the public can then still give feedback. So another 4 weeks of feedback. And then after that, the feedback goes towards the state authority where they will make the final decision. So that's the formal process of amending the plan. But suggestions to amend the plan, that's something you can write to your state assemblyman, you can write to your municipal councillor, you can write to your city council all year round. You can give suggestions. So in fact, right now, when MPPJ is going through the proposals to amend, it is going through probably 100 different proposals that have been submitted by various different groups of people. And these proposals are not all submitted in a short window, but rather since the last round of amendments in 2014, these are proposals that have been sent in 2015, 2016, and even this year. And the City Council is just going through them and looking through it and deciding which proposals it's going to pursue and which proposals they're not going to pursue.
We have a caller on the line, Abu Bakar, who wants to ask, he's a resident of Emerald Perdana, and he wants to ask whether the Dash Highway will be part of the plan. Well, we can't hear you. If you are still on the line, maybe you can try calling us back. But basically, his question is whether the Dash Highway will be part of the plan.
The Dash Highway is already part of the plan, so I don't foresee any amendments to that in this round. But to be fair, I'm not as familiar with the northern part of PJ where the Dash Highway is as I am with the southern part where Bukit Gasing constituency is.
Okay. And we have another caller on the line, Muniandi. Hello, Muniandi.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello, IB.
Hi.
I'm always keen on to know what is the role, particularly in Malaysia, we don't have a local election. And local plans like MPPJ and all that is a local, under the federal ministry, right? So I want to know, all these plans, how much does the ruling state government, how much role or power or authority they have in terms of managing local plans and structural plans related to areas where the act is governed by a federal act. So this is we can have all the wishes during election, you know, saying, you know, you can do this and that. But when it comes to actual implementation, you know, the hands of the elected representatives are tight, just like Kuala Lumpur now, you know, same issues we have.
Yes.
We have no say in the local, how the local thing is run, because it's the mayors are appointed. I'm sure MPPJ also appointed mayor, so around that question, yes, please.
All right, thank you. Let's deal with this. Now, this is unfortunately not a black and white question. We have a bit of a muddle here. Basically, the framework in how local plans and town planning that is done in Malaysia is controlled by Parliament. Parliament makes the law, and Parliament delegates the planning the initial planning to the local authority. So MPPJ does the planning. They draw up the ideas and the suggestions. The law mandates that they go through these two rounds of public engagement. So they have to do it. They like it or not, they have to do these two rounds. If they want to do more, that's fine. That's great. But at the very minimum, they've got to do two. After that, the state government has a say in approving the proposal from MPPJ after the public hearing. So then that's where the state government comes into play. Now, how does the federal government get involved? The federal government has a national physical plan. So the national physical plan is basically like the master plan for the country. So all these local plans in PJ, Subang, Klang, KL, Shalom, Seremban, Johor Bahru have to comply with the national physical plan. If it does not comply, then the plan cannot get through. The plan to be illegal. So far we don't find that big of an issue. So basically the people who draw up the plans have to ensure that the plans comply with the national physical plan and have to comply with the state structural plan. So the state authorities also drop the state structural plan. Basically, they plan the state from a more big picture scenario that also, so the state plans has to comply with the national physical plan and the local plans has to comply with the state plan. So that's how the federal government gets involved when it comes to town planning. Now, DBKL is a different kettle of fish altogether because unlike in every other state, in DBKL, the votes of the people don't count because you don't choose your government, you don't choose your KL government. You only choose your member of parliament, and most of KL have spoken up for one party, but the other party won nationally, so the other party runs the city. So unfortunately, they dropped their own DBKL master plan, which interestingly does not exist in a formal form. There's only a draft DBKL master plan. It has not been gazetted. And so basically, without a master plan in KL, the mayor has a free hand in approving what he wants to approve from time to time. He's not mandated or he's not constrained by a plan as the mayors in PJ, Shalom, and the rest of the country are constrained. So in PJ, if let's say the area is zoned for residential use and you submit a plan to build a shopping mall, you'll get turned down. And the mayor has no authority to say, okay, I give you permission to build a shopping mall here because the land is zoned for residential use. But in KL, it's anything goes because there's no formal plan gazetted.
I remember you previously mentioning that the density in PJ is higher than Hong Kong and Singapore. Would the master plan be able to address issues of congestion?
The master plan can deal with some of the issues of congestion. So we are working on a plan parallel with the master plan, that is the PJ Transport Master Plan. We've talked about this on a few of the shows in the past, but let's give a quick recap here. So MPPJ has hired consultants to draw up a PJ Transport Master Plan, that is a master plan to get public transport services working in PJ so that 40%, at least 40% of journeys made in PJ would be by public transport. If we can achieve that, the amount of cars on the road will drastically drop, reducing congestion. Currently, it's probably less than 10% of PJ journeys are made using public transport. So we want to increase that to 40%, and wishful thinking is not going to achieve that. So, you know, we waited for SPAD, the federal body, for a very long time, and they never came up with a plan to address this, so we made a plan. So that plan is an important first step towards realizing it. But it is more than town planning. It is also quality of service. And that's where the licensing of public transport operators is not in the hands of MPPJ or the Selangor state government. It is in the hands of the federal government through SPAD. So SPAD has got to issue licenses to qualified companies and supervise them and monitor them correctly. So if public transport operators don't deliver, then people do not feel comfortable, do not feel confident in using public transport, and then they rely on private transports, and then we have a much harder time overcoming congestion. So it's a mix. We've got to get town planning, the town planning part done right, and we've mapped it out. We have mapped it out so that every part of PJ is of walking distance to a bus stop, and that every bus stop gets you to a MRT, LRT, or KTM station within less than 15 minutes. And we've mapped it out. This is how it will make it possible. And now there's 106 feeder bus routes that are on the map to make that possible. And we have presented it to the federal government, to SPAT, and we need SPAT to go ahead and implement this.
So what's the next step then, if you the maps are already drawn out?
The next step is for SPAT to license an operator to do it.
Okay.
So they could license MPPJ to for MPPJ to be that bus operator. Now they have licensed us to operate 4 free bus services. So I think everyone's seen the green color free bus that PJ operates. Now that they have licensed us to do, but they have yet to license us to run the 106 feeder bus routes. So they could license it to us, but maybe they may, if they feel it's too politically difficult to give us 106 bus routes, they could license it to a federal government subsidiary like Rapid KL. They could license it to a private company, one of the private bus companies. I'm not fussed about that. I'm neutral as to who the service provider is, as long as somebody is licensed to do the job and that company is monitored so that they deliver and they actually, you know, run those routes properly and they run the services on time and they run the services with decent quality buses that, you know, are comfortable, not too uncomfortable, not broken down. Aircons must be functioning in a climate of Malaysia. So these are the minimum service standards that the bus operators need to have. And SPAT has got to ensure that everyone who has an operating license meets these standards.
And I'm assuming the feedback now is that there are not enough buses?
They aren't enough buses. So just to give you a rough indication, we have about 1,500 buses, not just in PJ, but the whole Klang Valley. And London, which is of the similar size as the Klang Valley, and London has so much more rail, so it needs less buses than Malaysia. But London, which is about the similar size as the Klang Valley, has 7,500 buses, despite the extensive amount of rail that it has. So now, if you look at Malaysia, we've got roughly the same size, and look at the Klang Valley. We've got the same size and same population as London. We don't have as much rail as London, so we definitely need more buses than London. So I would say easily we need 10 to 12,000 buses to be able to deliver decent, good quality public transport. But look at this, we only have 1,500 buses. You want to look at another example, look at Singapore. Singapore is one-third the size of the Klang Valley, and despite... And another example of extensive rail connections all over Singapore. Singapore has 3,200 buses on the road, much, much more than the Klang Valley's 1,500 buses. So we definitely are not providing enough infrastructure on the road to provide good public transport to answer that question. And that is beyond zoning planning. That is, so it goes hand in hand. You've got to get your town planning right, but at the same time, you need to have the bus services, the train services run properly in order for us to overcome congestion.
And I think last mile connectivity is a priority now from
it is.
From SPAT, right? So what would, I don't know if this is a fair question to ask you, what's the feedback when the public requests for more buses on the road?
Well, for now we see SPAT not saying no, but also not delivering on that request. You mentioned last mile being a very important priority. It is. And that's something that's also important in PJ. And in fact, when the MRT was being built, so I did do a press conference once at Filio Damansara station, because there's an MRT station just in front of Filio Damansara, but there's no walking path to Filio Damansara. So the federal government invested 23 billion ringgit to build the MRT line 1, but it did not want to spend a few extra 100,000 ringgit to build a pedestrian pathway to the station. So MPPJ is now spending a couple of million every year building more and more pedestrian paths. So every year we do some. We try to catch up by making walking easier in PJ, but it's a work in progress, and that's something that's going to keep having to improve every year so that it's easy for people to walk. And that does a bit to help the last mile issue. But last mile is not only walking. Last mile is the feeder buses. And that feeder bus, either SPAT gives us the license or SPAT gives somebody the license, but SPAT better well give someone a license to run the 106 bus routes that we have put down on paper.
I have a question from a message actually from a listener, Augustine. It's related to public feedback. He's asking, what is the KPI for complaints like street lights or road resurfacing? Because he's from Kajang, and who would he need to contact?
All right, so when public complaints are different things from the engagement for local plan amendment. So local plan amendment, when you put in any feedback, There is a column for you to tick whether you want to be called for a hearing. That means an opportunity to see the state exco's, the state ministers in person to explain and justify your objection or your suggestion. So by law, that is a necessary step that needs to be done. And everyone who wants to be called for a hearing will be given an opportunity to speak up in front of the state exco. So that's the KPI for the engagement when it comes to town planning.
What's the eligibility though? Do you have to be a stakeholder?
You have to be a person who can write.
Okay.
In fact, you don't even have to live in that area to give feedback.
Right.
All right? So and anyone, just about anyone can give feedback. But to the extent where the your city and the state takes into account your feedback would also vary based on your reason for giving the feedback. So it's not enough to say that I object to this zoning. I object to this residential property being turned commercial. But, you know, if there should be good justification for it if there's an objection. So I think the ones which are more controversial are probably more and more commercialization happening. So people are afraid of traffic congestion, people want to object. And the people who are living in that area, their objections may carry more weight. But ultimately, the State Planning Committee, SPC in short, the State Planning Committee that is made out of the Menteri Besar and 5 EXCOs, they have the final say on all these objections. So they will have to deliberate the proposal, the merits of the proposal, and the drawbacks as highlighted by the people who have given the objections, and then they have to make a call. Painful as it is, someone's got to make the decision in the end. But with regards to that question, if you have complaints regarding streetlights and whatnot, typically it's 2 weeks, but you could refer to your respective local council. I apologize, I'm not familiar with Kajang's KPIs, but you can definitely check with your local councillor. Different councils have different KPIs for different complaints.
Can you just remind us the line or the Facebook page for the PJ councils?
So for PJ is www.mppj.gov.my. And if you want to make a complaint, you can see it on the page there, Aduan Online, and you can click on that and just key in your complaint. If you prefer Facebook, you can just search MPPJ Aduan, and they have a Facebook page for that where you can just make your complaint on Facebook. And they'll interact with you on Facebook to get clarification and update you there.
And pictures are not required?
Pictures are not required, but pictures can be very helpful to make sure we're all on the same page of what is the real problem.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't want officers to fix a different issue and not the one you are actually complaining about.
Yes. One thing that caught my eye in this plan is the designated areas or zoning areas for assisted living and retirement villages. What are these?
So one of the things that we lack in PJ and the Klang Valley, and in fact in Malaysia, is retirement villages. So retirement villages would be would also fall into then two different kinds of sub-zones. One would be independent living retirement villages, where you're old and you want to move into a facility that is senior citizen friendly, with toilets, kitchens, and public amenities that are senior citizen friendly, and you want there to be someone on call in case there's any emergency. So that's independent living retirement villages. And then you have assisted living. So if you need you're in a situation that you need constant medical attention and you need like a nurse on call 24 hours, so then you have assisted living facilities. So these options are not quite prevalent in our societies. We've got, you know, here and there, old folks' homes that have been turned from bungalow houses to old folks' homes, but it doesn't quite address the need for retirement villages like you see in Australia and Japan. So we have enough commercial spaces in PJ. So I, for one, would not advocate converting any more zones into commercial zones, because we have sufficient commercial space in PJ. Rather, that if let's say an existing zone is no longer needed and wants to change, I would say convert them into retirement villages. And in fact, in the upcoming amendments, we may be looking at two areas. One is former government quarters and another former government office that will probably change its zoning into assisted living zones where then the operator of the land can build retirement villages and assisted living retirement villages there. So that will cater to a segment of society. So this is an example of, you know, updating the plan to benefit society at large.
We have a message wanting to ask, there is a new pathway in Section 17, PJ. It's a tactile walkway for the blind, but he says it's done without actual concern for the visually impaired because it leads into trees and poles, so it doesn't take you anywhere. It's near the Happy Mansion. Could you advise?
Yes, I am aware of that. I've visited that pedestrian path, and I've had strong words for MBBJ. That is absolutely shoddy construction, totally unacceptable, and the contractor has to rectify it. No two ways about it. So no, I do not accept that kind of workmanship. Basically, for those who are not familiar with that area, that pedestrian path was built because it was near a school. It helped people to walk in that particularly busy road, and the poles should have been moved and the trees should have been not in the middle of the path. So there was ample space to make sure that did not happen. But unfortunately, the contractor just built the path right through trees and poles. So if you were actually blind and walking on that path, you would, yes, you're right, you would hit a tree or a pole. And that's really, really not acceptable. So that has to be made good. But incidentally, things like this comes down to the implementation of the objective. So you've got to have a plan. Sometimes we are very frustrated at the certain implementation, and that's understandable. There's still a lot of shortcoming in the delivery. But at the same time, we must not lose sight of the discussion of the bigger picture, because planning affects how the town grows over the next 20, 30 years. It's not a short-term thing. It's a long-term thing. And so when we have rounds of discussion and feedback on the town plan, it's good to sometimes take a step back and like, yes, I'm frustrated at certain roads not being up to acceptable standards. I'm frustrated at certain playgrounds that have broken equipment. But that does not mean we want to give up green spaces, because then the future generations would have lost it forever. So, you know, thinking of what we want in a city and talking about it is great. Sometimes, now we are a city of 700,000 people, and I'm sure a lot of listeners out there have great ideas, and you know, if you share them, you never know, one of your ideas may be actually adopted. So what do we need more in our city? I think that's a good question for us to think about. What do we want more? Do we need more green spaces, you know, or do we have enough green spaces? So that's okay. Do we need more spaces for arts and culture? Do we want to see more education institutions come in? So we have acres and acres of potential rezoning capacity coming up soon, because we have a lot of abandoned industrial areas. Do we want to spend energy enticing new industries to come in? That brings its benefits. You know, it brings in jobs into the city area. Or do we think that it's time for us to embark on new uses? Like, do we want to try to attract universities to come into the city centre? So these are good things to discuss. And this does not diminish the necessary actions that need to be taken by council to address the complaints that have been highlighted in the show today. And as well as, I'm sure everyone listening would have a list of public complaints, from street lights to walkways and playgrounds and whatnot. So those need to be addressed with, but it's also good to talk about the master plan. And so during the upcoming feedback, it'll be good for the public to participate. There'll be a lot of zoning changes. I believe most of the zoning changes are good for society. I may object to some of them myself, because those which I feel are not good, I would object. And I would urge everyone to participate in and take part in that.
In places that are currently industrial zones, for example, if you were to change it into something else, like a green space, would the execution be expensive because of all the existing factories over there?
No, yes, it would be. So if we change zones into something that the government needs to operate, say, for example, if you rezone a factory into a park, and so then the government will need to acquire that piece of land. Now, will that cost money? Yes. But I may be lone ranger in advocating this today, but I do advocate that the government should spend money, invest money in acquiring land for green spaces. In fact, I would like to give an example of Sydney. Sydney last year announced that it's going to spend $400 million over the next 15 years to acquire land to improve the quantity of green space in the city of Sydney. And I think that's something that we could do and should do in Selangor and in cities like PJ to improve quality of life in the long run. We should look for opportunities to acquire land in strategic areas that would have the maximum benefit of that area being turned into a park for the benefit of the people. So we've got to look at parts of our city, and there are parts of our cities that do not have a decent park within the neighbourhood. PJ is big. You don't want to drive 45 minutes to a park. So we want to make sure that we bring sufficient green spaces to all corners of PJ. So I would advocate that that's something that we should look into. It's not going to happen this year, but it's something that I advocate, and hopefully we would be able to put aside some money for this in the coming years.
We have a caller, Mr. Ng. Hi, Mr. Ng.
Yeah, just to tell you, how about the dash which you're passing to a really high density area in my neighborhood, Damansara Perdana? Because we have been protesting for the past four or five years already, and there's still like no end to it.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Once again, I have to admit I'm not an expert on DASH, and maybe my colleague Elizabeth Wong could be a better person to answer this question on air. But to my understanding, a number of changes have been made to DASH to minimize its impact on the housing areas. But because it's a connection that is needed by areas north and west of the highway, that highway will still go through. So that's something that has been approved a number of years ago, and actually it is kind of settled already.
Okay. Another message that came through WhatsApp asking whether is there a limit on the number of occupants in a residential home in PJ, and what can neighbours do on homes that are rented out as hostels to foreign workers. I think we've covered this on a show in the past. You can check out that podcast. But if there's any update on this,
I think that just to recap, yeah, the law does have a number, but that number, it's a very high number. So 350 cubic meter of space for one adult. So typically a house would have a three-bedroom house could house easily more than 10 people based on that calculation of 350 cubic space per person. But you can always lodge a complaint with your local council and have them investigate and confirm this. So
350 cubic meter would be
350 cubic feet. So typically a house is about 10 feet high of living space. So that's about 35 square feet of ground space per person. So if you got a 1,000 square feet house, you can house nearly 30 people in that. It's a very, very ridiculous number, but that's the number in the federal law.
And a previous caller, Munyandi, has a follow-up. He wanted to ask, how can we increase development, land for development, without depleting green areas, and how to maintain leaseholding?
All right. So what was the second part again? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
The second part is how to maintain leaseholding.
Leaseholding.
Leasehold land.
Okay, so if you have leasehold land, you can, in the state of Selangor, you can freely renew your lease. The government does not put restrictions. So if you're in Singapore, you can't simply easily renew your lease. But in Selangor, no problem. You just need to pay the necessary premium to renew your lease. Now, as for how do we maintain our green spaces, in our local plan, if you pay attention to the amendments that we have done since coming into power in 2008, we are not removing any green space for private development. That's something I would strongly object if anyone suggested, and we are not going to be doing that. So we're not giving away any of our green spaces to new shop lots or new condominiums and so or new shopping malls. So we'll maintain the green spaces that we have. However, I would like to see us do better than just maintaining it. We should try to create new green spaces, but that is costly because that may require acquisition of property. So we have done one case. I've mentioned that the KTM Reserve land in PJ Old Town has been turned into the PJ Railway Park. That wasn't done with much cost because that was land reserved for KTM use that KTM wasn't using. So we have turned it into a park. But if it requires acquiring privately owned land, that will be costly. But I believe that's an investment that is worth it in the long run for the well-being of PGA residents.
We have a caller on the line, Diane.
Yes, hello.
Hey.
My question is twofold. My first question is, I'm a permanent resident. I've been here just over 40 years. I'm married to a Malaysian with three Malaysian children. But when it comes to buying property in my name, in Selangor, I cannot buy property less than $2 million, you know, which is, to me, very unfair. And in most countries with PR, you're given exemption. When you buy property, you can buy property at the same price as any citizen. And
okay.
People, you know, I've been here 40 years.
Okay.
You know, so for me to buy property in my name, at $2 million, even $1 million, is not necessarily realistic. You know,
right.
It's not fair. You know, and we're actually categorized PR holders with visa holders under the same category, which is not fair again. Because visa holders don't have any connection with the government, you know, when they come here. Whereas I have a Malaysian government IC, and I've been here 40 years, and I'm treated like a visa holder. I know many, many people in the same community of status as me, and they have the same situation, which is not fair.
Thank
some
you,
of
Diane.
Us have been here 50
Rajiv,
years.
Do you have any question for Diane before you answer?
No. Thank you very much for that suggestion. That merits discussion. I will raise it up with my colleagues and the Menteri Besar to review that. I'm glad you brought this to our attention.
Yeah, because I think it's a part of a cooling measure from the government to stop speculation in the property market, isn't it? But to see this as an unintended consequence is quite unfortunate.
So thank you for bringing this up. It certainly warrants a discussion. And maybe something can be done about it.
Okay, thank you, Diane. I guess we still have a few minutes left. I'll just pick up on what you said about the trade-off between green spaces and development. Is there an ideal that we are looking for when, in terms of ratio of green space or schools to population, and whether or not, because when reading about town planning, this term PPP, public-private partnership, town planning is being outsourced to a private developer. And I was wondering how much this is happening in PJ.
This is happening less in PJ. Now, this happens more with bigger development. So when you've got a whole township that is under that is being created typically out of palm oil estates, then it is normally the developer that plans the township rather than the local authority. But in the case of PJ, most of our developments are infill developments. So they're not like a vast township, like say the development of Putra Heights and the development of Bukit Jelutong. So here it is more of infill. That means they are small developments. So it is not so much of that planned by developer thing, rather than it's now the fact that we've got a mature township in PJ. The challenge is different from Shah Alam. We've got a mature township, so we've got to see how can we fine-tune and do the right trade-offs. Now, what's an ideal amount of green space? I subscribe to 20 square meters per person. That's in the National Physical Plan. That's a good start. Australia has 24 square meters of open space per person. Singapore has about 15 square meters of open space per person. So we've got that numbers to play with. Currently, we are about half of that requirement in PJ due to previous planning shortcomings. So if we can at all increase the quantity of green spaces, that'd be good to move us towards the standards that Australia has. Or in fact, we're not even at the standard that Singapore has when it comes to green space. So maybe we should aim lower and try to move to the level that Singapore has. 15 square meters. Singapore's about 15 square meters per person. We are about 10 square meters per person. KL's about 8 square meters per person. So let's aim at 15 square meters per person first, and then see if we can go from there to 20. But that will entail some redevelopment, and that will entail some cost in getting there. But that's something that we should seriously consider, and society should lend a voice. Shall we spend taxpayer money to acquire land to produce more green space?
Okay, thank you very much. If you weren't able to get your question in, Rajiv Rishikaran will be making an appearance at the BFM Health and Living live event happening April 8th, Sime Darby Convention Centre. The topic will be creating urban happiness, and Rajiv will be speaking about how we can pursue happiness in terms of town planning. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.